Blog Talk Radio.
Project Outbreak Initializing. Booting. Completed. Now checking system. Loading. Completed. The beast is online. Test subject ready. All systems functional. Loading. Completed. Thank you for participating in Project Outbreak. Now injecting virus. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
TC Downey, aka Beast Zeno, and with me here is my co-host Jason Sorrell. Jason, how you doing today, man?
I'm doing good, man. Just enjoying the Super Bowl and enjoying my weekend and getting ready to start up all over again Monday, doing some tattoos and the usual.
How's business?
Business is good. Business is surprisingly good. It seems to be getting better all the time. Real excited about it. Really happy that I've got a strong return clientele thing going now. So lots of people that have tattooed before getting a hold of me, wanting to set new appointments. And these folks understand just kind of how hectic my schedule is. So when I tell them it's going to be 2 weeks or a month or whatever, they're all about getting that appointment set. And they're as excited about it as I am.
Awesome. That's good stuff. Besides doing really good tattoo work, from what I've seen, you have a very interesting business strategy. What is that?
My business strategy?
Yeah.
Is that what you're at? I'm not sure what answer you're looking for, but my business strategy is to kind of put myself and my work out there as much as possible. I know you called me in the past one of the biggest internet whores in the, on the internet right now, that I'm always plugging my stuff and trying to now spread out to different demographics. So I'm working on, making sure that the fetish artwork gets seen by the right communities, the BDSM and fetish communities, that the tattoo artwork gets out to the tattoo communities. I'm on a bunch of different websites, and I'm a featured artist on tattoos.com right now. And then locally trying to really establish my name as a local artist here in Austin, Texas, so that I have a little bit of word of mouth going here. I kind of had that back home in Fort Wayne a little bit, but I'd really like to see that kind of take off down here.
All right, and one of the things that I also found interesting that you told me is that you accept almost all forms of payment.
As far as with tattooing?
Yeah.
With tattooing, my theory was back, when I was working in a shop, I always questioned why we charge so much for tattoos. A tattoo that takes about 15 minutes to do, I was still charging $50 to $75 to do the tattoo in a shop. And, yeah, half of that goes to the shop or whatever, but it still didn't make any sense to me. I love doing the work, and I don't want to do it for free. But I still don't. I just didn't feel that we were being fair in our prices. So when I do tattoos, out of my private studio now, I can be flexible about what I charge folks. So it might be cash. Cash is always appreciated. But if it's electronics and stuff like that, I'll trade electronics. I trade for cell phones, stuff like that. I can things I can sell on eBay. And my daughters, they all have the PlayStation or PSPs and Nintendo DSIs and iPods and all kinds of electronic crap because, whenever they see me get something, I'm doing the tattoo because I like doing the tattoo. So when I get something like that and they see it and they want it, all they have to do is bat their eyes and go, "Daddy, I want that." And that's what they get.
So it's safe to say that you're really doing something for yourself. You don't exactly struggle, right?
Yeah, I wouldn't say that I struggle. I mean, it's not like I'm not rolling in it or anything, but doing what I wanted to do. I went to college for art. I've always been into art. I've always been drawing. I finally found a way to kind of make it pay off. I love tattoo art. I love the tattoo work. I love the freedom it kind of gives me as far as time and everything. I end up doing a lot of tattoos, so I'm scheduling myself out of that bit of freedom. But I just love the whole lifestyle, the whole everything about it. Much better than working a 9-to-5.
Right on, man. It's interesting because when I decided to do this show, it was, I guess I was just sitting there kind of thinking to myself, who is there of interest that, I'd like to get put up on here for one of these highlight editions. And it kind of struck me that of all the people that I've done highlight editions with, even though, you've co-hosted with me and done all kinds of other, stand-ins for me and everything since the beginning of this show, I never really took the time to, put the spotlight on you, man, and it's kind of messed up because you actually happen to be one of the, few people in this world I actually look up to. I think philosophically you're sound as hell. I mean, it's really interesting is the way that you handle your business. It's no wonder you're successful because in just about everything that you do, you handle yourself very well. You have a very I almost want to say meticulous planning habit. You think things out 10, 15 moves ahead of the time, and you have a philosophy for almost everything, at least so far as I've seen. So with that whole monologue kind of out of the way there, man, I thought maybe you'd tell us where you came from.
Well, I was born in Fort Wayne, Indiana. I mean, that's what you're talking about. So northern Indiana, the northeast corner near Ohio, and a short drive from Michigan, a short drive from Chicago, in a small city. It's not necessarily a town, but we were the city of churches. Which is funny, when you go downtown, at least for a while, you could kind of get on a high building and look across the cityscape. And just a ridiculous number of church spires and crosses in the air and everything. So kind of a German conservative, city. That's where folks came from. And not a lot going on in Fort Wayne, Indiana, as far as, anything, is this the Satanist scene or anything like that. It's a little bit backwards. And I grew up there, loved Fort Wayne, Indiana. And for a while, I was probably one of the craziest things going. I have buddies I'm still in contact with that after I got out of the Army, while I was in college, we had a house that one of my aunts owned, and we stayed in this house, me and a bunch of my buddies, and it was the place to party. It was the place to crash and, get drunk and have a good time, and it's where the girls were at and everything else. And the philosophy I had back then was that, here's Fort Wayne, there's nothing really to do, there's nothing really going on, so if you're either going to be bored out of your mind, or you needed to make something happen. If you were going to do something, you need to do it. The tools were all there. You could get to the liquor store. You could get the music. It was all there. It was just a matter of putting it all together and making it happen. And that's kind of, I guess, been the way that I do everything, is that I can wait around for somebody else to do the shit, and then I can go participate or whatever, or I can figure out how to make it happen myself if I'm not patient enough to wait. Typically, I'm not that patient. So that's kind of where I came from. I think I did the majority of my growing up. I mean, I went to a rural high school. I think my graduating class, there might have been 60 people in my graduating class or whatever. Cornfields right up against the football field, basically, that rural. And got out of that and was in the Army, joined the Army my junior year, was in the delayed entry program, and got to Europe. Was one of my goals, one of the purposes in joining the Army. I had two goals, visit Europe and get my money for college. So I joined the Army and get into the Army right before, I signed the contracts and everything right before Saddam Hussein invades Kuwait for the first Desert Storm, okay? So I'm in basic training when Desert Storm's going on, and Desert Storm ends like a week before my basic training was finished. So dodged the bullet, basically. I go to Germany. Germany for me was nothing but punk rock shows at all these different clubs and skateboarding and different women and going to the red light districts in different towns and checking out some really cool music stores and cafe houses and everything else, traveling all over Europe. And when I wasn't doing all that shit, on my off time, I was in the Army. So a lot of my growing up occurred there. And I know when I got back to Fort Wayne, when I ended up finishing my 4 years and got back to Fort Wayne, hooked up with a lot of my friends from back in high school or whatever, and they enjoyed the change. It was like me magnified, basically. So lived in Fort Wayne for a while, and then finally decided, I had enough of this kind of backwards town where there really wasn't anything going on other than what I was doing, and moved to Austin, Texas.
Right on. Now, real quick, kind of backtracking a little bit, I'm curious about your enrollment in the Army. From all indicators, from what I've seen, you actually enjoyed your time in the service. At least that's the way it seems.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I loved the military. It's a crazy place to be. It's a really a different world because you have a different set of rules. But the rules are a little more clear-cut. So once you understand the parameters, once you understand that system, because the system is so much more rigid than the system we have, as a civilian, there's more loopholes. There's more ways to get around things, so there's more leverage. And you also have more privileges. If you know that system, you know how to work it. So I loved, and it was an opportunity for me, this kid from this rural town, to fly across an ocean and visit all these wonderful European countries that I'd only read about. Plus I was in artillery, so that's a funny story. I go to my I decided the only way I was going to pay for college was to join the service. I joined the service my junior year, got the delayed entry program, so I figured that was the only way it was going to happen. Lo and behold, my senior year, I earned an art scholarship, but because I was already contracted with the Army and didn't want to, give up on that contract, to go back on that contract, it was my word, I didn't take the scholarship. I ended up passing the scholarship to somebody else and went into the service. But all the people I met there, a great bunch of guys from all over the country, we did a whole bunch of crazy shit. There's a lot of things that I can't really go into in the air because it'll get some folks in trouble. But we did a lot of partying, had a lot of good times. And thinking back, going into it, I kind of knew it was the right thing to do. My stepmother and I, we didn't get along. This is my father's fifth wife, and she and I didn't get along. And she was drinking her rum and coke one night. We're watching the news about our Iraq invading Kuwait, and they're talking about where the war zones are at and everything else. And she's got her glass, the ice tingling its glass, and she goes, you know what, Jason? I hope when they send you to Iran, right? And she's drunk, and I point out to her, I go, me too, because the war's in Iraq, right? And that just pissed her off. But got in country, and basic training was crazy. It was tough, but even the guys I talked to in the Army when we got in our units and got kind of used to what was going on, we loved even basic training. It's a big game. And all the crazy shit you got to take a look at, all the weapons you got to shoot, all the different things you got to do. We were taken to a strip club while I was in basic training. The drill sergeant took us to a strip club as a reward, okay? And I remember my drill sergeant saying something to me about how enjoy this because every stripper that's up on stage right now is married to an officer in your chain of command.
So
all these people who had power over us, we're watching their wives take off their clothes, So we thought that was kind of cool. And that was the attitude. I mean, cock strong and confident was the attitude of every person with even a little bit of authority. You learn to learn that, hey, you have that in you. As long as you know what the hell you're talking about, you know what you're doing, you have that within you to just be, just be confident, to be yourself and have a good time with everything. And, I remember, getting to Europe, and the first thing one of the sergeants says that has the detail to take us to, wherever we're staying while we're in transit, he goes, you guys are going to love it here. A bunch of young guys here, the women are fucking in the bushes. These European chicks are just, they're crazy. They'll fuck anything. It's awesome, right?
Right.
Well, a year or so into being there, I'm actually hooking up with the German people, right? I didn't like hanging on a post. I didn't like, you know, just having whatever little shit they had for the Army guys right near the base. That, you know, that was, it was always catered to the military, and it kind of sucked because you didn't get to get into culture. So a lot of my friends were German. And I remember telling the story about how, you know, hey, when I first came here, the guys talked about how all these German girls are easy. And one of the guys that I was hanging out with was an exchange student. He goes, that's funny, because on my way through the exchange program, one of the guys that was managing my exchange was saying that, you know, that was the way it was in America, that all the girls in America were easy. So kind of a neat little lesson there, that actually girls everywhere are easy. You just have to have your way in. And being different is a good way in.
Awesome. So I'll take it, your experience in the military was life-shaping, definitely.
Definitely. It helped shape my attitude about things. The other thing, though, is that I wouldn't recommend it to anyone right now while there's a war going on. If you're patriotic and you want to go out there and you want to risk that for your country, you know, I would applaud that. But for folks who are just looking for an answer maybe to some difficult problems they're facing or whatever, solve those things here rather than join the military. It was fun, but I also did it during peacetime. I have those folks that are doing it during a war.
Right on. So, all right, that's the military part of it. Now, you're in Austin, Texas now. How do you like Austin, Texas?
Austin's awesome. Austin has everything that I wanted to find at Fort Wayne back home. Austin seems to have it. There's always something going on. There's always, you know, different opportunities being made available. We're kind of like on the cutting edge culturally in a lot of ways. Like, this is for a long time, it's been known as the music capital of the United States. I don't know if so much of that holds true anymore, but it is the book capital of the United States now, where new authors are actually breaking out. There's new opportunities for artists here. There's a lot of industrial growth. And as a tattoo artist, when one out of every five people in the city have a tattoo, there's a lot of opportunity there as well. But again, even with all the different things there is to do here, it's helpful to be the type of person that no matter what, you're going to find a way to make something you want to do happen. Austin's just great. And love the weather, especially, the change up from the cold. My daughter lives in Fort Wayne, and she's still buried in the snow. And here we had snow for a day, and it's melted, and our winter's pretty much over.
Right on. So what do you think about the imminent threat of Satanic International Network possibly meeting there?
Well, I know that my couch is already spoken for. I know that my place is already there's already going to be a guest here. So, but I'm digging it. I hope that that's what happens. That we all meet up here in Austin. I'm looking to, you know, block out. I don't know how long the thing's supposed to be going on, but I'm looking to block out the a week of time or whatever just to hang out and you know, drink beers on 6th Street and check out different clubs and do whatever. So I'm really looking forward to it.
Right on. And how's Jamie feel about that?
Jamie's all right with it. As far as having a guest over to crash, Jamie's down with that. I'm seeing here that Zach's in the chat room saying that we're crashing at my place. There's actually it's not a hotel, but it's a I can't even think of what it is. It's more than your room is more than just a hotel. It actually has a kitchenette and everything else in it. And we're close to everything, and rooms there are like $199 for a week. So if it gets kind of ridiculous where everybody wanting to come hang out here, we can go ahead. We might we'll just get our money together, and we'll rent a couple of rooms down the road here and crash that way, spread it all out if that's what comes to. And Zach, I got my car battery and jumper cables waiting for you, buddy. So, come your ass to Austin.
Awesome. Awesome. That's great, man, that Jamie's willing to let you, hang around these kind of creeps, man. So anyway, there was a, I guess, a particular story that was told here on the air, and I thought maybe you might want to tell your version of it. Why don't you tell the folks out there in, you know, Blog Talk Radio land how you met Jamie, man?
All right, well, yeah, this is, how I met Jamie, the story that was told on Blog Talk Radio kind of caught the story, I guess, in the middle, okay? Jamie was actually dating a friend of mine, another chick, and I had met her off and on through my circle of friends in Fort Wayne, and see every once in a while, but part of the deal was I was pretty much told, you know, this chick's off limits, this girl is off limits, you know, talk to her, whatever, right? And I didn't know at the time the kind of shit that these people were talking about me. These friends of mine were talking some serious shit. I don't know what the issue was, but they definitely put a partition, or attempted to put a partition between myself and Jamie for whatever reason. Other than, the only thing I think of is the chick she was dating is just really jealous and shit like that and was worried about me, I don't know, doing whatever I do with the girls in our the circle we're in. I wasn't like fucking, not trying to make myself out to be a player, but they seemed to have it in their head that every good-looking girl that ended up being in our association, I took a shot at, which may or may not be true. But anyways, there was a Halloween party at my friend's house. They had a pretty decent sized house, big yard. There was, you know, going to be a lot of this huge party, and we had parties there before for Halloween. And usually, what would happen is me and a couple of my other friends, would bring all the alcohol. You know, the hostess, who was at that time Jamie's girlfriend, knowing that, you know, me and my asshole friends were going to get drunk and, you know, pretty much, you know, make it a party, told her friend, her boyfriend, it's a weird story, this whole little polygamous relationship thing going on, but told her boyfriend, my friend, my fellow artist and fellow Satanist, hey, tell Jason not to bring the alcohol or whatever. I didn't bring the alcohol anyways. I brought more alcohol because she said don't bring any booze, okay? So we're out in the front of this house drinking shots and getting drunk and having a good time.
Right
and
on.
Jamie comes walking up, you know, parked the car or whatever, and she comes walking up, and she just looked hot. I mean, just more so than, you know, the other times I'd seen her before, okay? And I was a little bit drunk. I had a lot of liquid courage going through my veins at that moment, all right? So when she kind of rolls up, I say something about how attractive she is, okay? I'm sure it didn't come off very romantic. It was like pretty much like, you know, whoa, is that you? Oh, my God, look at you and everything. She gives me a hug, okay? And I don't remember for sure whether or not I told her she should give me a hug or whatever, but she gives me a hug. You know, thank you for the compliment. I know she did that. And I go, well, if you're going to give me a hug, you know, before you go in, you need to give me a kiss, okay? And she got embarrassed. And she smiled, but she said, no, I don't want to give you a kiss. And I saw that she was into it, right? At least it looked like that to me, that she was into it. So I was persistent. I said, oh, come on, give me a kiss, you know, whatever. And eventually she gives in, okay? And she goes ahead and gives me a kiss, all right? And then she goes in. She was there, you know, she was helping with the ceremonies and everything else. These are all Satanists and Wiccans and everything else. So there's going to be some ceremony, some ritual and everything. And she was actually, or I don't know if she is or was or what the situation is, but she actually is a, I don't know what type of clergy you would call her, but she has, you know, she has that certification. I think at one time she was even able to marry and marry people. So I'm not exactly sure.
Right.
She was going to be, you know, leading this ceremony or whatever. And, Through the rest of the evening, I actually took the time because, you know, I didn't really know that Jamie was into me up to that point where she, you know, gave in and gave me a kiss. You know, there was, you know, this thing. It was obvious. I not obvious, but it seemed like, yeah, she might be interested. So we ended up going out and talking. And I know she had disagreed with me about some of my philosophy. Okay, she had a different point of view, a different tact. So a lot of the evening ended up being this kind of debate. Okay, but it was a good time. We talked back and forth. And then one point in the evening, I made a point of my buddy Eric had an art gallery basically in the basement of this house. Okay, but nobody was hanging out there. It was his art studio. Nobody was going downstairs to check it out. So I made a point during the evening of going down to the basement and checking out what Eric was doing, okay? You know, with the intention that Jamie would see me going down in the basement. And this would kind of, you know, seal the deal, basically. If she came downstairs and I knew, would know for sure that she was into me. And if she didn't come downstairs, then I would know, you know, okay, well, she wasn't as into me as I thought, and I needed to give up the ghost, right? Well, luckily for me, she came downstairs in the basement and, you know, let me know that she was interested. And from that point forward, things seemed to work out. We've been together for 7 years. I know I almost did fuck it up. She told me that we talked and everything else, and she said that she didn't want me calling her, okay, immediately. She had something going on at home or whatever, and couldn't have me calling her immediately. So instead of me calling her after the party, I had one of my friends call her, okay? And it pissed her off a little bit. But we exchanged some emails, we went out on some dates, and it's been wonderful ever since.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. She's really, really sharp chick, too. I've had a chance to read a lot of her writing, and I've gotten to talk to her once or twice myself. And so, I mean, just absolutely amazing that, you know, you two get along so well. You're both very articulated and both present your case very well. So I can only imagine the kind of heated debates that that house gets into.
It gets ugly. we have different perspectives on a lot of things, and we agree on more than we disagree with about. But yeah, if we've got certain lines in the sand that we've drawn where it's a given, that's her opinion, and this is what she believes, and this is how she backs it up, and here's my opinion, and here's what I believe, and here's how I back it up. And it's pretty much at that point you just go, okay, well, you know, well, at least the sex is good because we disagree here completely.
right on. But you're an all-around family guy anyway, right? You've got, two daughters of your own or three?
I've got two daughters of my own biologically, and then Jamie has a little girl that I've been there with since day one. So Nadia has two daddies as far as she's concerned. So yeah, I see it as having three daughters.
Right on. So now all three are artistically inclined too, correct?
Well, yeah, Nadia, she'll be six in April. So at six, everybody's artistically inclined, in my opinion, is at six. But they all, Vanessa and Gabriel, my 16-year-old and my 11-year-old. My 16-year-old is an artist who, as a matter of fact, right now she's being featured on Creative Body Studios as one of our artists. And she's into anime and manga, and she's into very emotive expressions in her artwork. She's into relationships. I mean, she's a teenage girl, so she's into relationships, not just the happiness and the hugs, but the heartbreak and the pain of separation and everything else, and she expresses that in her artwork, and she's getting better all the time. I mean, it's just amazing how even, you know, week to week, how much her work improves. And she's also a little more prodigious than her father. She draws a lot more. And I'm trying to, you know, she's starting to take it more seriously as far as the quality materials and the technique and the things like that. She's also very into the digital thing. She likes to draw on the computer. So she's using, I think she uses a mouse and different tools on Photoshop. And she's aware of far more, you know, art programs than I am. You know, I use pretty much strictly Photoshop. She uses all kinds of things. And it's just amazing to see what she does. And then my 11-year-old has also a very good draftsman, but she's getting into sculpting. She enjoys, you know, creating a three-dimensional object, having something that you could hold in your hand and that might have something more value than just something to look at. But actually, you know, she likes making toys. She likes making different sculptures and everything else. So we're just very proud of both my kids. And then Nadia was really excited because in my living room, I've got two pieces by my older daughters. And then just recently, I actually framed, she gave me a page she colored out of a coloring book, and I framed it and put it up on the wall, and she was totally excited about that, but now she's made it her mission in life to actually draw me something and color it, and then it's going to go in the frame. So she wants to replace that piece as quickly as possible.
Right on. So it's safe to say, I'm assuming Jamie's very artistic as well. I don't know if she's actually visually artistic, but I know she's an excellent writer and an excellent poet.
Right. She's very creative, very articulate, very demanding of herself, which is why I think a lot of her work doesn't actually make it onto the internet. I mean, what you end up seeing on the internet is probably only 1 to 5% of her actual output. She's very critical of herself. It has to be just so before she puts it out there. Unlike me, I'll just throw any piece of crap out there on the internet and go, hey, buy that sticker. But Jamie's very, very demanding of herself as far as her creative work. And she also creates more just for herself than she does for anyone else. But she draws a little bit. There was a point a year or two ago where I was actually trying to teach the girls some basic drawing techniques, and the lessons I would give them, Jamie would follow along and do the lessons herself as well. So not bad. Needs a little bit more polish on the drawing thing. But she's creative also.
Right on. So now, how long have you been drawing for, man?
I've been drawing literally as long as I can remember. Like I said, I think all six-year-olds are artistic at some level. I've been drawing since I was 2 or 3 or whatever, and never put down the Crayolas, man. I just would draw things from comic books. My dad was kind of cool that way. He got us into comic books. He thought it was a good way to help us be literate and kind of expand our vocabularies, expand our ideas about certain things. So I was reading, Spider-Man and Conan the Barbarian and all these different comics at a really young age. And then trying to draw what I saw there. So comic books was a really heavy influence on my artwork. As I got into, got into it all through elementary school and then junior high, took the survey class that they have, they give all the sixth graders for art. And we were making shit out of clay, clay firing and everything else. And we weren't, there was really nothing going on. It was just, here, we're going to go ahead and do this or do that. And I didn't understand at the time that it was important to necessarily go through those paces to learn those lessons, because I was already drawing at a certain level, and I didn't appreciate it. So I pretty much dropped out of art. I had no interest in taking an art class where I didn't think I was going to learn anything. And for the most part, I was pretty correct. I mean, what they were putting out wasn't that exciting to me as far as art. So.
Hello? Uh-oh. He dropped off the line, guys, so I don't know if his phone died or what the deal is. All right, let's see. Someone type in the chat room if you're hearing me, at least, so I don't... All right, in the meantime, everybody just hang in there for a minute. He did say if I was starting to get too heavy, he was going to hang up on me, but I don't think Jason would do that, so.
Yeah, I'm back.
Welcome back, man.
So I don't know. I don't know what just happened there. Just the phone kind of cut off. I think it's like every show we've done for a while since I got these new phones. The phone drops out for whatever reason after a certain point. So I don't know where we were at in my little story about artwork. Like where did I cut off at?
I'm trying to remember now, man. I kind of had a shock, and for a second I was like, wait a minute.
I talked about my dad and comic books and being in art through elementary school. Dropping out of art classes in junior high, and then having a girlfriend in high school. Her freshman year, I was a sophomore. Her freshman year, she was having trouble with her art class, and she ended up coming to me with needing help with a drawing. So I helped her with her drawing, and she said that I should look into this because the kind of things that I'm into, that's what she was learning about in this art class. So I went to my vice principal, and then to my principal about changing my schedule. My principal actually scheduled an appointment with what would be my art teacher for the next 3 years in high school. And she said I was the first person to ever approach her with a full portfolio and an actual set of goals, you know, things I wanted to actually learn through art class and everything else. And I ended up getting, you know, signed up that week to start taking art. And between me and my art teacher, Mrs. Plu, it was a love-hate relationship for the next 3.5 years, 3 years or whatever it was, because we disagreed on so many things artistically. She's a very classical artist, and I was very lowbrow, pop culture even then, as far as my interest in art. I was lucky to have the opportunity to finally jump into an actual art program and go down that road.
Right on. So then you went, you graduated high school, went to the military. And
right, well, I graduated high school, yeah. Go ahead.
And then you went to the military, right?
Yeah.
And then you came back to college?
Yeah, I came back out of the Army. I spent a couple of years fucking off, and then I decided to go to college. And I went to college for 4 years at IU and studied art at Indiana University and studied pretty much every kind of art class that I could think of that would assist me in creating the kind of artwork I wanted to create. So drawing, human figure drawing, oil painting, printmaking, computer graphics, airbrush, every class I could think of that would help build my portfolio as an illustrator and a graphic artist and what have you. I'd gotten to a point where I wanted to start selling my artwork, and there was a clause in our student agreement with the university that the artwork we had, we couldn't sell until 2 years after we graduated. So myself and the administration and some other artists, we had a little bit of a fight with the administrators about that, and we ended up getting them to let us have an art show on campus every year where the student artists would sell their work.
Excellent. So when did Creative Oddity Studios come around?
I think 1998 maybe, or maybe a little bit later after that. It was part of that whole thing with college. My friend Eric, who I just mentioned earlier, and another friend of mine, Bud, and some chick, I don't know, Becky or something like that, we were all into the same kind of artwork. We were all interested in Satanism. We're all doing, you know, really graphic illustrations, really into, you know, the erotic art scene, skateboarding and tattoo art and that kind of thing. And we decided to set up a little group, and the group ended up being called Primal Aesthetic. So Primal Aesthetic was the germ that Creative Oddity Studios actually came from. Primal Aesthetic was this cabal of artists, and the deal was we would do shows. That we would go to different places, and we would try to get our artwork into these shows, into coffee houses, and into, you know, wherever we could get our artwork shown. And then when we're showing our artwork there, well, then if we could get one of the other artists in on the show, we would do it that way, or we would just advertise the hell out of everybody else's artwork. So it was just, you know, cross-pollination of advertising. We got together, you know, once a month to exchange ideas and go over what projects we had going on, things like that. And it got to a point where we had a number of other artists involved, and, you know, just to be part of that exchange every month, we ended up doing some big art show. Just, you know, we ended up having like 50, 60 pieces of this art show at a sex shop. It would end up being the biggest, it was the biggest sex shop, newly opened sex shop in Fort Wayne, Boudoir Noir. And they were really cool about having us, and they showed a bunch of our artwork, and the artwork, now that I look back on it, the artwork that we had tonight just sucked. It just sucked ass. But a couple of us, we were developed enough that there wasn't as much pressure to have these group shows anymore. So we started kind of going off on our own, and Creative Body Studios was my split from Primal Aesthetic. Eric was is another one of the artists that actually kind of took off, and he's still doing artwork. Everybody else that was involved just kind of, I mean, they weren't really as engaged in the project as we were. And so when we took off, it kind of just, you know, faded away.
Right on. So, and wham, bam, we're here today. Now, I mean, it's interesting because you're a fantastic artist, but you, I mean, you're also very talented in a lot of other ways. You're one hell of a philosopher, one hell of a writer. You've written, I don't know, what, 7, 8 books, something like that?
I don't think it's been, quite that many. I know that Black Tarot, The Devil's Due, The Baphomet Codex, of course, the revision of The Baphomet Codex, those are the books I actually consider that I've written. Well, I guess the Tattoo Apprentice. And then I put the books, like I've got Visual Crimes, where I, you know, a bunch of my old artwork's collected in one volume. Not quite that many, but yeah, there's a few books.
There's quite a few. Of them, which one's your favorite?
Well, my favorite right now is the most recent, The Baphomet Codex, because that's more reflective of where I'm at right now. Probably my favorite book is the book that I'm working on now, or the books I'm working on now, the Cthulhu Heresy, and that's a working title. I don't know what it's going to be, and The Process. That's kind of my thing. As far as whenever I'm doing something, whatever, you know, whatever I've got going on, I don't like the idea that I'm going to be known for something I've finished and have walked away from. You know, it happens, but I don't like that idea that I'm going to be known for, you know, these demon girls or these erotic images or whatever. I want to be known for whatever it is I've got going on right now. I don't want to, you know, rest on my laurels. I also don't like the idea of, you know, being known for just my name, you know, just that name recognition. I want to be known for what it is I'm doing, what it is I'm producing. Trying to build a name on, you know, being known for anything else just seems, you know, disingenuous to me. It's not something that I'm interested in pursuing. So my favorite books tend to be the ones I'm working on right now. And the two that I'm working on right now are the Cthulhu Heresy book and Process.
Well, what exactly is the Cthulhu Heresy book going to be about?
Well, obviously it comes out of the whole Heretics of Cthulhu mess with the Cult of Cthulhu. What I'm going to be writing about is the things that I thought would be the proper direction for a Cult of Cthulhu to go into. I've decided not to be critical of the existing Cult of Cthulhu. I'm going to give Derek Dishaw all the credit he deserves for having originated these ideas in my head, for bringing me into contact with these different concepts and everything else. But what I'm going to be writing about probably, it's what I want it to be, is a handbook for anybody to pick it up to have a structured process that if they wanted to establish their own little Cult of Cthulhu, or any other organization, that they have this little handbook as a guide. So it's just going to be my ideas, and I'm going to pass it over to you to let you take a look at it and see if there's anything you want to add to it. And this is a long process. It's a long process for this reason, DC. It could go forward right now. I could step up and have the Cthulhu Heresy ready to go and out in a month, okay? But Eric is he's got his Emerald Bible that he's been working on, and that he's been promising people for at least the last year that this book was going to be coming out and everything else. I have a feeling, and I don't know for sure, this is just my feeling, and it might just be me being paranoid or whatever, but I have a feeling that the reason the Emerald Bible hasn't come out yet is that he's waiting on the Cthulhu Heresy book to come out so that he can respond to it in his book.
I see. So you're kind of trying to wait him out.
Right. Well, and yeah, and it can sit on the back burner for, you know, forever as far as I'm concerned. He's even moved on to a new project, which, you know, good for him. You know, this stream of thought thing he's got going on. But since he's not dealing with that, then I'm working more on the process. And the process deals more with my interpretations of the Fourth Way, Gurdjieff's The Work. And Jamie and I actually are going to a local class here in Austin. We're actually discussing with people who represent a Fourth Way Foundation. Just right now it's just the intro course and everything else, and we're trying to play a little bit stupid. We don't ask too many questions. We get kudos for every comment we make or whatever, but she and I just kind of hold back and see what's going on. And I think this will be, Monday night will be like our fourth or fifth class. And we're not signing up for any cold or anything. We haven't shaved our heads yet or anything like that. But we're just kind of checking it out. And it's been fruitful so far. But it gives us another little perspective on the Fourth Way that I think will help the book.
Right on. Right on. So how do you negotiate the Fourth Way with Satanism?
Well, I most of the stuff the Fourth Way focus on when it talks about communal efforts, schools, I kind of toss that out. There is a value in the idea of a school, in the idea of a communal effort, but I don't think it needs to be structured the way it's structured in the Fourth Way. The idea that there needs to be somebody that has more experience leading people that have less experience. That's helpful. But even with the person that has more experience, they're still getting something from their students. They're getting something from the people that are on the tier below them. There was an interesting model that was presented to me that described this kind of interaction, that at any point in your development, there's an exchange between the people that are above you and then the people that are below you. That's a natural occurrence, and that it, the prime place to be is where you're getting something from both those ideas. So at any point in your evolution, even the person that above you, they're in the same place. They're getting something from above them and something from you who are below them as far as your experience is concerned. So it's more individually focused in that way. The other thing is that all the hokey kind of ideas about energy from us feeding the moon and his explanation of the need of the biosphere on our planet, how it works in a cosmological sense, along his ray of creation, I kind of just ignore that. There may be some value to it as far as discussing certain concepts within the Fourth Way, but it really doesn't have any practical application, in my opinion.
Right. It's a very metaphorical. I think it's a metaphorical interpretation of how things are supposed to work. But that, I guess that's just my take on it. I don't want to tear up too much time with this whole thing. What I actually was kind of hoping to start moving towards now is actually talking about how it is that you, well, first, what type of Satanist you consider yourself, and then how it is that you have gotten into Satanism.
Well, I consider myself an evolutionary Satanist, and that's what I discuss in the Baphomet Codex. Is the idea of Satanism, for the most part, from what I've observed, is more reactionary than proactive. You tend to respond to these things that are going on around you. Satanism is a response to Christianity. It's a response to institutionalization. It's a response to a stoic system in our society. And evolutionary Satanism, or what Jason King refers to as postmodern Satanism, what other folks, you know, refer to as proactive Satanism, that's the type of Satanism that I consider myself to be involved in, that I'm seeking development. And I understand that my development is not only does not only serve myself, although that's my focus, is my development and focusing on making myself a better person, achieving my goals and reaching my true potential, whatever, or discovering whatever that potential is. But there's also a social value to that, to every individual doing the best they can. The more individuals that are taking care of themselves and being of some productive value, the less that a society needs to deal with people who aren't productive, who don't have the means or don't have the will to do those things. So by being that example, by encouraging that in other people, that evolves our society. And then furthermore, the species focused on, spatial evolution, that human beings have conquered the environment for the most part. We can, we can close ourselves up off in little boxes, have everything we possibly need at our fingertips, and environmental conditions no longer dictate our evolution. So we have to actually begin to dictate our evolutions by pushing that envelope, pushing that environmental envelope, going into space, getting into getting the oceans, that kind of thing, far out things like that. And
right,
then every individual has an impact. Even if they don't do anything, they have an impact on that overall evolution. So that's kind of where I come from as far as Satanism is concerned. How I got into Satanism, I hear this, it's almost cliche that every time you hear this kind of story where as a kid, I was always into something other than whatever religions were going on in the world around me. My father grew up a Lutheran. His father, mother, father were Lutherans, but my dad didn't have a lot of, didn't put a lot of emphasis on a religious training for his kids. My dad actually had studied for a while to become a priest or a pastor or whatever they call it, reverend or whatever it was, whatever they call it, in the church. He was actually, when he was in high school, he was actually giving sermons at his local church and things like that. So he was definitely not a Bible-thumping dude. He was a hippie. He had a beard that went down to his waist and hair down to his ass. Smoked a lot of pot. He always encourages to ask questions, to think about what we were being told. And I don't think he's not a Satanist. I don't think it ever occurred to him that the things he was telling us to pursue were along these different satanic ideals. But the idea that you need to think for yourself, you need to make sure that what you're being told is real, it's true, and not just what some asshole's telling you is the truth. He encouraged us to check out different churches and different religions. And even let us, we explored mythology and everything else. He let us do whatever he wanted to do as far as our theistic experience was concerned. And as I got older into my teens and everything else, of course, I came into contact with other possibilities beyond this mainstream Christianity or Judaism or whatever. And I started exploring those possibilities. The mythologies that I was studying. I started finding religions, modern religions, that were reflected by these mythologies, witchcraft and things like that. And I got into studying, paganism or neo-paganism and Wicca and witchcraft and magic and hermetics and, blah, 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 all that stuff. And none of it ever rang true to me. There was always something hokey to it. There was always something, ridiculous about it, about how, it always seemed to have, limits. It was a different set of morals, a different set of values that were basically guided by the same thing, as far as I was concerned.
Right.
So,
on.
Of course, you always hear while you're studying this stuff, you hear about the Satanic Bible. Okay, every witch, seems to have an opinion about the Satanic Bible, has an opinion about the Church of Satan and Anton LaVey and everything. And my interest in horror films, rock music, and everything else, Anton LaVey and the Church of Satan and Satanism was always an influence in my thinking, without me even realizing it. It was a secondary influence, kind of this thing out of the corner of my eye. So when I was 13, I said, okay, I want to see what all the hype's about. All these people talking about the Satanic Bible, and you hear all kinds of shit, man. You hear about, just having it in your house can bring a curse on your house and all this other shit. Same with the Necronomicon, man, the Simon Everett Necronomicon. It's hilarious, right? And I never bought into that shit. When everybody said there was, hey, there's this house that's haunted, I'd go, let's go. Let's go see this haunted house. Let's go see this ghost. Because I'm not buying that shit. Kind of a, skeptic.
Right.
So I get the Satanic Bible. I read it cover to cover, man. And it was just this kind of aha moment. It's like, oh, here's somebody that thinks the same shit that I've been thinking. Okay? And it remains that way. The Satanic Bible is definitely the foundation of my my Satanism, my convictions about Satanism. But it's also, you know, my message when I get out there that if it's the foundation, you should build on it. It shouldn't be the limits of what you do.
Right.
So I started with the Satanic Bible, but then went to his sources, went to his references and everything else, and dug into where he got the information, and then I got dug into where they got the information, so on and so forth, and started to develop my own ideas.
Right. Well, you're known to be a little bit of a bibliophile. I'm curious, what authors are your favorite? Which ones you have the most books of?
The author I think we have the most books of right now is Chuck, the guy who wrote Fight Club. I always have trouble pronouncing his last name, Palutnik or whatever. We collect his books. As far as my philosophy and the books, the ones I have the most of are books by LaVey, mainly because those are the easiest to get hold of. We've got a pretty good Gurdjieff and Ouspensky library going. We got maybe a dozen books between the two. We got some books by Michael Ford. I've got one of the original copies of Moonchild by Aleister Crowley. We got a bunch of Aleister Crowley books. We got a bunch of books by different philosophers, Kant, and I'm rereading Atlas Shrugged right now by Ayn Rand. So it's just there's a variety of books here. I've got I'm looking over at my bookshelves right now. Generation Hex by Jason Love, kind of a controversial figure. But still, my favorite book, the book that I typically recommend to anybody considering Satanism or philosophy or anything like that, oddly enough, is Stranger in the Strange Land by Robert Heinlein.
Is there a particular reason why?
Well, the story is about this guy, Michael, who is born and grows up into his teens on Mars. And on Mars, it's science fiction. And on Mars, they have a whole different way of approaching philosophy and spirituality, that they're dead. When they shed themselves of their physical being, that's just another stage in their developmental process. Okay? And this kid who is totally alien to our society comes back to Earth and is in a position where he's faced with, economics and politics and religion and philosophy and everything else from a totally alien perspective, okay? And none of it jives with his way of thinking. None of it jives with, him thinking for himself. So he has to learn to be human in sort of an artificial way. And it kind of just highlights all the things, we as Satanists tend to believe in about religion and about, politics and about, philosophy and things like that. So Michael, to me, represents a fictional Satanist with a little bit more power behind him to make whatever his will is manifest.
Right on. Oh, that's really interesting. I guess I need to check that book out.
It's entertaining. It's entertaining as hell, too. It's just funny as all hell. My favorite character in it is Jubal. This old dude, Jubal, I don't know how the hell they pronounce it. I've never actually heard their name pronounced. But he's this old guy who's independently wealthy, doesn't watch television. He writes, he has these four hotties, or these three hotties, running around his mansion all the time, and they just take dictation from him all the time. They answer his phones, they cook his meals, and everything else, and he's too old to actually have sex with any of them, but he enjoys just watching them, swim around his pool, and watching them take his orders and shit like that. But he's basically studied, every kind of religion, every kind of philosophy. He's been poor, he's been wealthy. He prefers being wealthy, and just a very wise, old, independent crank who kind of becomes Michael's guide through the human experience.
Excellent. I'll definitely have to check that out, man. It sounds really interesting. I'm assuming that in some ways this guy Michael that you're referring to is I don't know, I'm trying to think of what you would call it. Not quite an archetype, but pretty close to that.
Well, yeah, definitely. And you've got Jabal, who would also fit that bill. You've got there's a reverend of the it's some sort of Baptist church that's become like the church in the United States, the official church of the United States government. He represents a type of archetype. There's an archetypical politician. There's all these different archetypical beings. The idea of an old value human being is represented by a reporter who has all the old learned convictions and morals that he doesn't necessarily agree with, but he finds himself obeying anyways. And then you've got the what I call a new phase human being who is hungry for, different ideas and different experiences and everything else. There's a lady who's covered with tattoos. There's a whole, it's a mixed bag. It's a really good book.
Excellent. Now, Jason, you've been active in the occult community for a long time, both on the air and off. I understand for a while you were participating in some local occultist meetup that was going on, right? That there was an article actually in the newspaper or something, something about ordering pizza, if I remember right.
It was a meetup group here in Austin, Texas, and we were just trying to get involved in the local community again. And it was just this kind of eclectic group gathering, and it was just talking about, initially, we were just talking about what we're going to be talking about for these meetups. What kind of things we wanted to do as a group. Hang on a second.
Yeah, man.
What's that?
Yeah.
Okay, you see, they're saying that the only thing they can hear is the intro.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's weird because it says there's 58 minutes remaining.
Do you think they need to refresh their browsers?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, hang on a second.
Yeah.
I'm typing that in right now.
Meetup group,
Okay, so
pizza.
Zach says he can hear us now.
Okay.
Oh, the show started over. Wait, this show start over? Can you hear me talking now?
Refresh, it worked. Zach's hearing us real time.
Okay, Zach says, refresh your browser.
Yeah.
Interactive radio, man. This is badass.
I love this thing, man. I honestly, the show has become an incredible source of joy for me, man. I get to do Sunday nights talking to you, Saturday Matt Strapped, Friday's X Fucked, although most of the time I have trouble getting him on there for more than 45 minutes of the show.
Okay, so it looks like everybody's coming back online, it looks like.
Right on.
So, what were we talking about?
Oh,
Oh,
we were
about this group.
right on.
Yes. So there was this meetup group in Austin, and we ended up going a couple of times. And of course, when you go to the first meetup, nobody knew, who I was or anything like that. So it was kind of cool just to be another guy, talking about Satanism and talking about, different ideas and listening to you guys talk about what their goals were and everything else. That was kind of, it was fun. And then, like the second or third meetup, the guy who's running it lets us know that one, there was a chick that was here from the local college or something like that that was going to be kind of taking notes and everything else. So if there was a problem with this woman taking notes or whatever, let us know because she would keep whatever we had to say out of her notes. But then the then that he mentions that when enough people come in the room, he mentions that, and it's been brought to his attention that we have somebody kind of famous here with us tonight, and I'm looking around for this guy, and he goes, we got Ego Diabolus here, you know, and you know, I like, you know, I'm not that famous or whatever, but he's like, you've written a book and you've done, you know, all this different stuff, and yeah, it was interesting, but it turned too much attention to me and not enough attention on what the meetup should have been going, you know, talking about or doing. So I don't know, I didn't appreciate it as much as I should. And then I come to find out about it after reading about it in the newspaper. That article that you're referring to, and we met at a pizza place, Mangia's Pizza, which is where the pizza thing came in. We were at a pizzeria. This is where they were having these meetups. Nice restaurant, but still just a pizza place.
Right on. Jason?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Oh, all right. Just all of a sudden I thought we had another tough technical difficulty. I was just like, oh, wait a minute. Yeah, we're live. Well, this new headset, I don't hear my voice at all echoing into it. So I don't know. There's not actually background noise, which is kind of cool. But on the other hand, it kind of freaks me out, too, when you get a few
right
seconds of silence. And I'm like, wait a minute, am I even connected?
Right. Did I just stop talking, or did he drop off?
Right. Yeah, so... all right. What's really interesting about this whole deal is not only are you pretty well known in terms of, you know, in a good way, I think most people that do know you think of you as being highly articulated, very intelligent, philosophically sound, and I mean, for the most part, pretty much indestructible in terms of holding their own. You know, you're not going to get butt hurt by anybody.
You know what? What's the point of that? You know, because it's how do I interact with these people? Well, it's on the internet. You know, and it's like, you know, what does that mean to me? Pretty much, you know, nothing. You know, it's really cool the people that I have met on the internet that are worth a shit. You know, you and Zach, Dark Fool. You know, even Derek Dishaw to a certain extent. But for the most part, you know, most people that I deal with that you know give me my little comments or you know kudos or talk shit about me in email or whatever. That's as far as it goes. So what's the point about getting, you know, what's the point in getting upset about any of it?
Right on. Well, what I think's really interesting about that is there have been a few people over time that have tried to frame you up to make you look like an ass. One of them being Paul Valentine. If I remember right, we had a conversation about that Average Joe Satanist or whatever it was.
Joe Satanist.
Now, this is a completely different individual than yourself, correct?
Right. He's a different guy. He's here in Austin, and he wanted to try to remain, you know, anonymous. He wanted to be because he didn't want who he was to affect what he was saying, okay? And I was of the opinion that, you know, he should just come out and be who he is and have his opinion. But he wanted the opinion to be coming from a neutral source. So I helped create the artwork for his little icon and logo and everything else. It's really simple. It's just a stupid little cartoon dude. And he had a thing going where I think it was just on Yahoo Groups, and he had a website. And I helped, you know, get all that set up. And he was just giving his opinion. You know, he would give his opinion about different Satanists that ran across his attention, people he talked to, you know, that he would talk to people about these different Satanists, you know, get their opinions, and then, you know, give his thumbs up or thumbs down about these guys. And he ended up talking shit about, let's see, it was Paul Valentine and John Ali he ended up talking shit about. And those two dudes, out of all the people he talked shit about, those two guys just got nuts about it. And
right on.
Because of my association with him, they ended up – John Ali never made this accusation, but Paul Valentine made the accusation that I might have been Joe Satanist, okay? And on his website for a long time, that accusation stood. Now I don't think his website's even up anymore, Paul Valentine's.
No.
Right. But he's, it was an accusation was made. And then what ended up happening with Joe Satanist, I guess, is that his whole gig ended up getting taken over. The forum was taken over for some other fucking drama that had nothing to do with him, between John Ali and some other group. Okay. So he just dropped the whole fucking thing. And he's one of those Satanists that realized that he preferred not to deal with Satanists. He ended up showing up at the meetup I just mentioned. He was there at that meetup, but, nobody knew it was Joe Satanist. Nobody even knew about Joe Satanist at the meetup, but it was, the two of us together.
Got a couple
Paul, chuckles. What was that?
I said you guys got a couple of good chuckles over the whole shit, I'm assuming.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah. And then Paul Valentine, I think he jumped in on and commented on one of my videos on YouTube. I think it was the Bring Something to the Table video. He dropped a comment saying that something about how dare I talk about substance since I have none. That was his comment or something. And all I said was, because when you deal with somebody like Paul Valentine, what they want you to do, they want the drama. They want to get engaged in some fucking argument with somebody so that they have something to do. That's what gives their lives meaning. So I just said, yeah, I dare, right? And he says, his comment back was, that's exactly what I expected from you. This is too easy. And I just responded with, happy to oblige. And I haven't heard from him since.
Yeah. I just thought it was funny because I actually came across that article on the WCSL website, and I had a laugh because what they had cut up in terms of comments from this other guy, it didn't sound like anything you would have written at all. I mean, even trying to go under an anonymous account, you would have had to have been quite talented to do that. You have certain telltale things that you do, in your posting. I mean, the same kind of thing could be said with the recent Dan Dredd mystery. It's just when you get somebody who's as developed of an individual thinker, you kind of leave your intellectual calling card, so to speak, every time you post something.
Right. Well, the guy who did the Joe Satanist thing, not a bad guy, but he wasn't involved. He didn't want to do research. He didn't want to dig deep into what it was he was doing. It was just his first blush opinion, typically, about whatever was going on. So I thought it was cool, what was going down, but I did appreciate his method. I pretty much let him know that, he needed to be a little bit more forthright. But he lost his taste for it pretty quick. But yeah, I just thought it was funny that that Paul Valentine, rode that fucking horse until it died. Basically, it was something that he posted on his website almost as a mark of honor that this guy was paying attention to him and took the time to write this article about him. I don't think Paul was angry about it at all. I think he loved it because it was just somebody paying attention to his ass when he knows that nobody really should. Which is kind of why I made that joke in my last video about at Paul's expense about how. The end of the Satanic Panic. The last thing he did before he died was bring an end to the Satanic Panic. Because how is he relevant now?
Right on. Well, I guess the next real relevant question to all of this, man, is what do you think of the current state of quote unquote Satanism, and what's your commentary thereafter? What direction should it go, or do you think that things are moving along in their own natural progression?
As far as Satanism as a whole is concerned, I don't know really one way or the other what to say about what's going on, because you've got a very few outstanding individuals who are making things happen. They're doing what they want to do. And whether it's connected to Satanism or not connected to Satanism, it doesn't matter. They're doing their thing. They're enjoying what they're doing. They're being Satanists. And then you still have the majority of people who are just following along with those outstanding individuals who aren't really contributing anything, who are calling themselves Satanists, but really have, really don't have what's going on in their lives to be at that point. And whether it's a matter of they lack the development, it's just going to be a matter of time before they're up there with those other people, or it's really they just don't lack the qualities to be a Satanist, and it's something for them to do until they grow bored with it, or until, you know, it's just, it's never going to happen. I don't think that Satanism as a movement is ever going to coalesce into something solid with an overriding agenda that all Satanists are going to be, or the majority of Satanists are going to be behind and pursuing on a socio-political level. I think it's always going to be about individual Satanists who are just setting the example. I mean, that's all it really takes, is setting the example. And as long as there's a new example being set, as long as the example being set is developed over and over and over again, Satanism will just be fine.
Okay. So you're of the opinion that the State of the Union is that things are as they should be.
Right, right. That this is just the way it is. This is just the way it's going to be. And it's working. It's been working for, what, now 5 decades, it seems like? I think it just continues to move forward. I don't think Satanism will ever be in a position where, you know, it's actually matching the level of popular awareness that you see in Christianity or Judaism or any of the other big religions. It's always going to be the alternative and to whatever else is going on. And the ultimate alternative that it's pointing to is just do for yourself, man. Just do things for yourself. Just think for yourself. Just work on yourself and use Satanism as a symbol for all that.
Right on. It looks like Zach Black's calling in, so I'm going to actually go ahead and put a caller through, if that's okay with
you. Okay. Yeah, sure.
All right, Zach, what's up, man?
Hey, guys, I'm on the air.
You're on the air.
All right. I just want to call in and say, hey, Ego, man, I really appreciate, you know, all you've done, man, for not only just Tech National Network, but, I mean, I think you're a stand-up guy. And out of the 5 people that I would be butthurt and have to just kick out of my sight, you'd be one of them because I couldn't match you intellectually. So I appreciate the cross-networking and everything like that. So, yeah, man, I think you're doing a great job. I think philosophically you're really sound and we're all on the same level here. And out of the top 10 Satanists I can think of, man, you're definitely in there.
Cool, man. Thanks.
No problem. I look forward to seeing you in Austin, man, because we're coming. We're coming in a wave to come crash your pad, man.
Right on, man. That'll be cool.
Yeah, it will, man. It will. It will. You know, and I appreciate, you know, your donations as far as, you know, selling your artwork and stuff, man. I really do appreciate that, man. I bought a lot of beer with that money. Thank you very much.
Right on.
And also, yeah, that design you did for Sin with the Devil Girl, stuff like that, and the T-shirts and stuff like that. That's really cool, man. I appreciate that.
Right on. Right on.
You know, you made that video about, you know, on YouTube where you had my back about calling homosexuals deviants, bunch of people,
right.
bunch of fags got upset over that. You know. But yeah, you know, I think we see eye to eye. I mean, who's not a deviant in this room? I mean, I know Beast likes to play in the mud. I know you like the battery cables. I mean, I like my own thing. You know.
That's good shit, man. That's just good shit. Awesome. So, Zach, did you have any questions that I haven't asked, Jason, that you might want to answer?
No, you know what, man? I've been listening to the show. I just want to call in and tip my hat to Jason. So that's pretty much it, man. I'll let you guys carry on. I'll get out of here.
Cool. All right.
Cool, man. Thanks.
All right, guys. Take it easy. Bye.
You too, man. So, Jason, man, I mean, obviously, you're a sharp cat. You know, everybody knows it. I'm sure you know it. I'm absolutely positive you know it. What do you think it is about the way that, you know, you think or whatever that makes you so efficient in your approach and in your writing style?
Well, I think it's a matter of, first of all, just not giving a shit about what other people's opinions are necessarily. That, you know, having an opinion and being willing to express it without really having any holds barred. I mean, there's a sense of tact.
Shoot, we lost him. Too funny. Wow. And Cricket's really hating on him today. Trunk Town uses fun. Zach, you're cracking me up, man. Killing me. And you know what sucks? I just actually had a couple of really good questions come into my mind. So, we lost the guest of honor, Zach, if that's what you're trying to figure out. Jason is once again falling off the air, I'm sure.
Oh, I'm back.
Oh, there you are. There you go. Awesome. So, where the hell were we? We were talking about...
I guess my writing style and what it is that I think is that you know going for or whatever.
Right,
what it is about my writing style that it's I guess irrelevance is this sense of irrelevance as far as my writing is concerned. I'm giving you my opinion, and since it's my opinion, and in my opinion is the only one that matters. I pretty much say whatever I want to say, and I'm writing it for my own entertainment. If I get a laugh out of it, you know, if I find it thought provoking, well then hopefully other people will find it thought provoking as well. But I just, you know, I just put it out there and, I really don't care too much, what other people's opinions are. I'm hoping to inspire others to think for themselves. I'm hoping to inspire a response. Same as my artwork. It's also done with a sense of irrelevance. So that's probably my watchword in my thinking is when I give an opinion, I want it to have an impact on people, but what that impact is, I'm not overly concerned about.
Right. So it's however they want to take it is what you're saying.
Yeah. I mean, there's only so many ways you can take what I say. You know, I do kind of plan it out that if you're going to have a reaction, it's going to go one of three ways or whatever.
Right.
I'm surprised every once in a while somebody will surprise me with the way they go with whatever I'm talking about. And that's a really cool moment most of the time. When somebody brings up something interesting and gets me thinking about something else, that's always exciting for me. But yeah, it's all, you know, I have certain opinions, certain ideas that would make my life more efficient if other people had the same sort of ideas in their heads. So I'll put it out there. You know, just try to make my life a little bit easier because it's all about me.
Of course. Of course. One of the most worthy things that I've found about the new edition of the Baphomet Codex, and I think actually a lot of it was in the first edition as well, but you have a very strong social commentary. You have a very solid understanding of what's going on. Do you think in particular that that's something you may have developed from your time in the military?
Yes and no. I think it's just a matter of, maybe. Maybe that was where the germ was at. Because when you're in the military, there's a rank and file way of doing things. You definitely know your place, okay? And I think it's one of the biggest problems with our society is that most people don't know their place. And they can't aspire to a higher position if they don't understand the ladder that they exist on and where their place in that ladder happens to be. So knowing your place in society, that's a big thing. Having that sense of awareness of self is a big thing as far as my social commentary is concerned. And then once you develop that awareness, doing something with it. definitely is a message that I try to, you know, push forward to people. You know, be, if you're a fry cook, be the best damn fry cook you can be so that you can move up, have goals, try to achieve something, and, you know, focus on your own self-interest and encourage other people to do the same thing, you know, to focus on themselves and to be the best whatever the hell they're going to be is, because that will make things easier for you.
Right on. And right, well, one thing I've certainly noticed is it's always all about action for you. It's all about the here and now. It's all about the moving forward. I do see some hindsight whenever we're talking. Like, I know that you spend a little bit of time examining what's just happened, but I don't think there's a great deal of that, because you're kind of like on the money with the play-by-play thing, you know, if you know what I mean.
Right. It's like I was saying earlier. It's more about being recognized for what is being done. You know, being recognized for what you have accomplished and not doing anything further. Well, your growth stopped. You know, you're not relevant anymore. You know, you reached your pinnacle, and then what's the point? And I never want to be at that point where I've reached my pinnacle of expression. I've reached my pinnacle of, you know, self-growth or self-evolution, and I've got no further to go. As far as I'm concerned, you might as well be dead at that point. So it's always about, you know, what are you doing now? When somebody says to me, I'm a Satanist too, I always ask, what do you mean? What are you doing now? Well, how are you expressing that Satanism? What do you got going on? Usually that pisses people off, because they don't like the idea that they have to do any fucking thing to be whatever they think they're going to be. But it's always in my mind, it's not just being, it's doing. You can't say you are something unless that something involves some sort of process, some sort of action.
Right on. Yeah. Well, I mean, obviously I'm a motivated person myself, but I mean, sometimes you blow me away. There is a reason why I say you're Satanism's biggest whore. I mean, you must sleep like maybe 2 hours a day or something. I mean, I don't understand how you get all the stuff done that you get done, because there's no way in hell I could do that myself.
I always feel I'm falling short. Maybe that's it. I always feel that I'm falling short on the projects, and I'm always cheating myself on time. But if I sit around and if I'm not doing anything, I always find myself, you know, it's not satisfying to me. And I do a lot of sitting around. I mean, I'm not producing as much artwork as I'd like to produce. I don't write as frequently as I'd like to write. Other things happen. And, you know, I get engaged in other things. So there's always something going on. But it always seems to be in my life that anytime I'm doing something, I'm sacrificing something else in order to do whatever it is I'm doing. So I guess without that kind of frantic motion, if you don't got that going on in your life, that kind of frantic, you're never going to get it done. I think back to, I think Michelangelo died with like 60 or 70 unfinished commissions that one of his kids had to pick up. You know, that his work never saw completion in many of his most famous pieces. He never finished anything because he was always busy doing something. There was always so much going on.
Right on. Well, I mean, from everything I've seen and everything I've experienced myself, because I kind of had the same problem with work stacking up, I would assume that's got to be a big piece of it. But I think there's you have a good sense, a good clear sense of what direction you want to go in all the time. So I think that's in itself a big aid to your production. Hang on, I'm backing my truck up, man. I got to go grab a pack of smokes. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you. No, I think I think Jamie had said something about that recently. We talked about that recently. Even when it's, you know, I'm always thinking about what are we going to eat tomorrow? What are we going to do next week? What are we going to be involved in? What's going on? What's the next step? I'm always, like you're saying, I'm always kind of planning ahead. I prefer to know where I'm going. There are times when I'll take a break from that, you know, but then it's intentional too. I'll go, okay, today, or this weekend, I'm not doing anything planned, and whatever happens, happens. But even that is planned and structured, you know. Even though I know I'm going to go to this point, and this is where this bit of self-inflicted chaos is going to occur at, you know. But yeah, that's probably a big part of it, that I like to know where I'm going, and having a plan definitely helps.
Right on. And I see. Now that's really an interesting kind of thing to me, because I don't look at things in like a real step-by-step kind of planning process. I immediately focus on like, I don't know, what I want to be doing in a few years from now. And then I just kind of look at things as though, okay, well, if I'm on this, does this help me work towards this or whatever? It's kind of a little bit different of a process than what you're describing. You know, you kind of have to know, you know, and for me, it's better if I just kind of take it as it comes. So it's a very curious approach to it.
Well, I mean, and there's a certain level of that going on no matter what, that, you know, things happen. It doesn't always necessarily go to plan or as planned. But in those events, I mean, there's always the alternative, and I'm always ready and flexible enough to go ahead and go with the alternative, adjust my, you know, my map, if you will, to fit the reality of the moment.
Right on. Well, we've done this whole, it's got to have been about an hour and a half by now. I've yet to ask you, was there anything you wanted to talk about this show?
I was kind of taken aback when you first brought up the idea of talking about me for a couple hours. I didn't think that there was that much going on that was, interesting, but I don't know. I think it's cool that people in the chat room have said they've gone to the website, www.creativeaudiostudios, and checked that out, that they like the stickers, and they're actually threatening to buy some stickers, so that's awesome. I'm just going to keep doing what I'm doing. You know, I enjoy the interactions. I enjoy hearing from other people and like knowing that I'm having an impact on some level. But even if I wasn't, you know, I would still be doing it. So it's cool that it's appreciated.
Yeah, I certainly have found plenty of insight and good old camaraderie with you, man. So, you know, I figured it was definitely time to pay a little bit of attention to someone that most people should consider to be a coming icon in Satanism. You know, I honestly believe that, you'll just continue to succeed and continue to succeed and continue to succeed, because that's all I've ever seen. I've known you for, it's got to be, 7-8 years now? Something like that?
Yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah, it has been a while, you know, and the only thing I've ever seen happen is more and more and more people are aware of you, more and more people are talking about your artwork or how you did this post and shut down an entire month's worth of argument, you know, or whatever it is, you know, and people telling me, hey, you know, I bought a t-shirt off of Jason, or I bought bumper stickers, mostly bumper stickers is what people tell me they get from you. You must go to the post office a lot.
Yeah. So are you near the switchboard, man?
No, I'm not. I'm actually getting ready to order a pack of cigarettes. I need a pack of L&M 100s, please, full flavor.
There's a caller on the line. You want me to bring him on?
Yes, please.
Okay, so let me try it here. Let me see if I can click it. And just, wait.
Okay.
Oh, there we go. 909 area code. You're on the line on the Ooze Outbreak.
Hello, I'm on the Ooze. Yes.
You're on the Ooze.
All right. I have a question I would like to have answered.
All right.
Okay.
All right. Well, I was born around 1980, and back then it was normal to go around and, you know, just basically do whatever you want. So me and a couple of my buddies used to go around and drive around in my El Camino, and, you know, we'd raise hell. I'm just kidding. But we used to go around and just do whatever we wanted. But one day I got in a car crash while I was driving, and my friend Billy passed away. I want to know if he's watching me right now.
Yeah, the show tonight's about Jason Sorrell. Do you have any questions about Jason Sorrell?
Jason Sorrell. What, is he a book writer?
Some books. Yeah, you're speaking with him. I didn't know if you've been listening to the show and understood that this is a topical show, that we were discussing a particular topic.
We're talking about the tropics?
We're talking about specific topics? Do you have a question about tonight's topic?
Oh, well, what topic would you like to speak about?
The show tonight is about Jason Sorrell. Do you know him? Have you heard about him?
I heard about him now. I believe I'm speaking to him.
Right. So did you have a question about Jason Sorrell?
How old are you?
I'm coming up on 40.
You're going to be an old man.
Yeah, I think that everybody eventually is going to be an old man. I mean, that just happens with time, unless you die earlier than, you know, your natural extent of life. You know what I mean?
I kind of catch your fade. That makes sense to me.
Okay.
Well, what's the name of your book?
I've written several books. The Devil's Do, Baphomet Codex.
The Devil's Do?
The Devil's Do.
Shoot.
The Baphomet Codex. The Devil's Do, D-U-E. Do.
The Goo? Oh, gotcha. What's that about?
Yeah. All kinds of things.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. It's a collection of essays.
That's a collection of essays?
Yeah, the essays are on various topics, so that's why you're saying all kinds of things. I'm curious. You called in this show to ask if your buddy who died in some freak accident could see you?
My buddy Billy.
I'm pretty sure that he's watching you right now. Yeah.
Well, let me ask you a question, man. When Billy was alive, did he watch you a lot? When Billy was alive, did he watch you?
Did he want me? As in sexually?
Did he watch you? You're asking if Billy is watching you now that he's dead. You're asking if he's watching you. When Billy was alive, did he watch you?
I believe so. We spent a lot of time. The thing was, he didn't have many friends, so I kind of took him under my wing, per se, and we became friends, but he never really liked me. And then I felt kind of bad about him passing away, so I kind of missed him. But I don't want him to hold grudges or anything about the whole death thing, because I feel kind of bad.
So why did you think calling into this show was going to help resolve that issue for you?
Well, I'm not going to lie. I don't have many friends now. I just like having, you know, talks with people, and I wanted to know if you had any answers to help me ease my pain.
Okay, but why this show in particular? What drew you to this show?
I think it was the ooze picture. That looks pretty cool. And you seem like
what's
a pretty smart guy.
What? Okay, so you like the graphic, and that drew you in. Oh, well, cool.
And the flair of your name, you know, Charles, or, you know, whatever your name is.
Yeah, whatever my name is. Whatever my name is. Yeah.
Okay, this is just too ridiculous here. What's the deal, man? You just had to call in and, you know, fuck with us a little bit. You know.
Oh, language is unnecessary.
Oh, yeah, it's necessary because we're adults here. So that kind of language is difficult to use, and if it's too adult for you. What?
I said, did you say shoes?
No, I didn't.
I just wanted to clarify that.
Okay. Well, did you have anything else you wanted to say?
Yeah, I think that just covered the bases.
All right, well, thanks for calling in. We got another caller. You have a great night. And he's gone. All right, let me ring another one up. 909 area code. You're on the use. Oh, that. Okay, 909 area code, you're on the use. Hello? And he's gone.
Wow.
There's another one. There's one more. Hang on. 720 area code, you're on the use.
Hey, I was reading your Devil Do book, and I was wondering what inspired you to make that.
It was actually just a collection of essays, different things I wrote over a period of about 10 years. So what inspired me to put all those essays together was your money. That's what inspired me to put all those essays together into book form. Otherwise, they were free on the internet.
Good inspiration. All right. That's all I wanted to ask. Thank you.
All right, cool. Thanks for calling into the huge. TC, are you there, dude? TC.
Yeah, I'm sitting here talking, and I had my microphone clicked off. I'm here.
So the guy
likes
that answer
to
my question about the money.
Yeah, well, I mean, that is your bottom line inspiration most times, isn't it?
Most of the time, I need money to function, to do the things I want to do, to express myself, and the greater my material wealth, the greater my ability to influence and express myself. So. Everybody that has a hate on money, you know, that they're not interested in earning money, that they tell you that they have higher aspirations than money, money makes it easier to make those things happen. So it's not my entire goal, you know. I hope people are entertained by my books. I hope people that are inspired and enlightened by my books. But mostly, I hope they buy the books. So
right.
That's my bit.
Right on, man. And I mean, I think that's pretty reasonable, given, you know, you have such a loose economic philosophy in your tattooing business. I guess you could have a little more of a more hardline philosophy in your authorship business, right?
Well, and it's, you know, why put out a product if it's not your intention to earn a profit from that product? You know, why have that available to people at a price if your intention isn't to be successful in that business? Even with the tattooing, yeah, sure, I'll trade stuff for tattoos, but it's only stuff that I know that I can make money on. You know, I'll turn around and I'll do a, you know, $75 work, you know, or $50 tattoo for, you know, $100, $150, you know, iPhone or whatever, iPod or whatever it is, you know. So I love doing tattoos, and there are people that I will tattoo for free. But most people, you know, there's going to be a price to get me to do something for them.
Right on. Right on, and there should be, man. I mean, your hard work goes into it, right?
Right. Well, and it's the idea that it's not just so much a financial philosophy. It's, you know, it's a social philosophy that everything that you might want, everything that you desire, has to be earned. That if it's given to you, if you haven't done something to earn that, then what you're getting isn't worth it. It's not worth having. One of the social ills I see in the world right now is that there are too many people who expect to have things just handed to them. They think it's somebody else's responsibility to provide for them or for other people, and it's just not socially just, in my opinion. that people who do earn things should have to carry the weight of those who refuse to earn things for themselves. So,
right.
Yeah, if I'm putting something out there, the intention is that a profit is earned from that effort.
Right on. Right on, or at least some kind of gain, right?
Right. Well, yeah, if it's not an immediate material gain, there's something else going on, whether it's, you know, the notoriety from the book, whether it's having more people who agree with my philosophy and are applying that philosophy for themselves so that my daily interaction with people is a little bit easier because I deal with fewer knuckleheads, maybe. I don't know. Yeah, it's just, there's always some end. There's always some, you know, some justifiable goal in my effort.
Right on. Right on. And, I mean, to me, it's clear that you're very successful at achieving that goal. So, you know, I think hats off to you, my friend. Being at this point now the longest Ooze Highlight Edition. I hope that we did you some justice, man, and I hope that people download the show, listen to it, and really get a feel for who you are and what you're about, because honestly, I think that is just as high of quality as the product you put out. So.
Right on. Well, I appreciate it. I appreciate being given the opportunity to come on the show and share, you know, some of my insights and some of my history, and hopefully people found it entertaining.
Right on. I'm sure they did, man. I mean, I think you're a fucking barrel of laughs. I mean, who comes up with the idea of doing a mock Baptist minister for an hour?
Yeah, I never want to do that show again.
Sadly, we've had requests. I think I told you this.
I know. Oh, man.
You know what
I thought about?
What's
that? You know what? I shouldn't say it on the air. I shouldn't say it on the air. But I got a couple of other ideas that might be just as entertaining. So I'll have to get with you here later this week.
And, right on, man.
Spring goes on you. Along the same lines.
Along the same lines, huh? Cool. Cool,
yeah,
cool.
Yeah.
I mean, I actually, the new potential intro that I'm working on features Pastor Bill. So,
Pastor Bill, yeah.
What I think is probably going to be one of the most, talked about Ooze episodes ever. You know, I mean, between my bad acting and your amazing ability to just rant like a preacher for a solid hour, you picked the wrong.
Yeah, that's
option.
It's a lot of work. So, but yeah, it was fun. From that effort, it was fun to do it, and I know that people enjoyed it, so that just made it even better. And that in itself is a profit to me. It's something that, you know, I earned. So I greatly appreciate everybody that dug that show and continues to dig the artwork and the YouTube videos and my blogs and everything else. So all the feedback I get on that is always appreciated.
Right on. Now, for any Jason Sorrell fans that are listening, his email address is sorrellart@ Hotmail, right? Hotmail.com?
Yeah, sorrellart@hotmail.com.
All right. He would appreciate if you would take, you know, a picture of your breasts with Creative Oddity Studios written in marker across them.
And you have boobs and want to write Creative Oddity Studios across your chest with a marker. Take a picture of that. Your face doesn't have to be in it. But I always enjoy those photos.
Yes, absolutely. So this is the second best way that you can express your gratitude to Jason Sorrell. The first, all obviously, right, being buy a bumper sticker, buy a T-shirt, something. You know, that I think that would be the first one, right? Yeah.
Right. Buying a sticker. Not necessarily. I don't think we have any bumper stickers on the website anymore. Just buy, you know, buy the regulars, the standard. They're graphic illustrations. It's my artwork in sticker form. So yeah, buy a sticker, buy a skateboard, pair of shoes, you know, whatever else we got selling on there, posters or whatever. Buy some TC stuff. But then yeah, if you're a chick, if you want to buy a couple of stickers and cover your nipples with the stickers and then send me a picture of that, that would rock. That'd be cool for advertising.
Absolutely. And definitely, I mean, this is a platform. You can do it anonymously. You know, your name's not going to be printed on there. You don't have to put the head in there.
Right. Yeah, that won't even be part of it. It'll just be, movies,
right,
as far as the world is concerned.
Right. I mean, even if you do send it with your face in there, we'll Photoshop it out, so.
Yeah.
I mean, worst case scenario, I can always throw up, like, I don't know, Elf from Melmac's face in place of yours, you know.
Right on.
So, we can do that.
That'd be interesting to have a little page on Creative Body Studios as a collection, but nothing about the collection of those, you know, different breasts with Creative Body Studios written across them.
I think our fans. Yeah, I think it should happen, man. I mean, I've watched the Facebook page for Creative Oddity Studios, and you know, there's 100 people who've clicked the like button. So, you know, there's got to be at least 20 pairs of breasts out there willing to hit with a big black Sharpie marker.
Right on.
Yeah. So, just for thought. What we ought to do, man, is get a little baby doll shirt that just says Creative Oddity Studios, but do the C and the O or something so that it's right, around suggestive areas.
Right on. Right over their breasts.
Exactly.
<That's crazy.
laughs> We got about 8 minutes left, man. I can't really think of anything else to talk about except for maybe I am curious to know how you've been enjoying the interaction on Sin when you have time to get out there.
You know, I get on there and I check it out and I'm looking for things that strike my interest to talk about. There's always a little bit of drama and that's always entertaining. For some people and everything else, but it's usually not something I get into. I really like that they have that tiny chat thing going on Satanic International Network so that you can interact with people live, you can do the video thing. I'll throw a blog on there every once in a while. But it's really cool that so many well-thought-out and extremely intellectual people that live being a Satanist, that actually apply the things, they're walking the walk and talking the talk, are there sharing their experiences and providing that example to inspire others. That's what's really cool about Satanic International. It's best strength in that it's drawn really the best possible Satanists together in one place.
Right on. And it seems to continuously to do that with new minds showing up every day.
Right on.
So I'm kind of proud of that myself, man. I think it's funny because it seems like you and I have kind of come full circle in a way. You know, this is a very similar vein to what the United Order of Service was supposed to be about. And ironically enough, that's, the place we first came across each other.
Right on. Yeah, it is. We hooked up with the United Order of Cerberus, and it was like we were looking for it, maybe. We were looking for some sort of a group or just a place where we could be challenged, where it was, the ideas that were being expressed matched our own. And it took a while, But it looks like with Satanic International Network, that's finally going down. That's finally happening, where the best and the brightest are realizing that interacting with others is one of the ways that they're going to develop themselves.
Right on. I mean, now this is something you and I have been kind of shouting about for almost a decade now. It's really kind of funny in a way, because it seems like we've took kind of a short break from reality and tried to actually make something exist that, I don't know, can't really exist, you know?
Right. Right, that it was just, yeah. It's been a long road, man, and it's nice to be at a point where it's actually, you know, it's 10 years later, but the ideas that we kind of, you know, discussed so long ago, we've got other people talking about it, you know, with us. You know, they're saying, hey, you know, this is important and this is why. And all we can do is go, yeah, man, exactly.
Right on. Right on. I mean, I love the concepts that you can come up with, you know, by Satanist. I'm trying to think of some of the other things that I've seen you over the years promote. I mean, I do have to say one thing, man. Creative Oddity Studios' website looks way better than it did when I first met you. That cheesy electrical graphic, man, used to kill me.
Yeah, it was, you know, it's the exact same thing I was talking about in my video, about how that shit was cool. And it was the one animated GIF that I just did not want to give up. And I thought that was so much better than just a plain horizon line. And it took a while for me to finally let go of that. But, yeah, we got rid of that, got rid of all the any graphic that could have been said to come from anywhere else, and created what I thought was a more engaging and energetic and demographically wide set of graphics.
Right on. Hey, I mean, now I think what you have there looks very streamlined. It's got kind of a comic book feel to it. Only complaint and criticism I can even really give you is that the disorganized banners at the bottom just, I don't know, they don't set right well with me.
Yeah, and I'm not sure what to do about that, because I want to give people, you know, I want to give these folks props for their support. And I want it to be on the main page, because that's one of the ways that you increase your position on the Google website or whatever search engines. But I'm not sure, you know, how I want to format that. I mean, I guess I could make them all, you know, the same size and, you know, have more of a grid going on there. But I don't know, man. You know, just another thing for me to play around with.
Right. Well, what I was actually kind of going to get at suggesting was different shaped buttons made special banners. One of the things that I was working on at one point in time was a flash website where you clicked on this and you would move through the hallway or whatever and come to the end of it, and that end of it would be, you know, a different web page. And I was creating these little circular and star-shaped and whatever other size little graphics. And I thought it was really cool when it was sitting there on the page, just kind of out of place looking. So I thought it might be kind of neat if, you know, you had something along that line happening at the bottom, except for make it maybe sort of collaged in a way that, you know, each graphic is a part of a shape of something, like, I don't know, maybe the shape of Baphomet. I know you like Baphomet or something like
right
that.
Right on. Yeah, it's something that I can try to figure out how to do it and put it together, so that the only thing I have with that is that there's a limit to the number of links you can add incorporating to that kind of image before you have to go with something else.
Right, to an extent. If you build it in Flash first and then, you know, house it as one thing, it can use all the links from the Flash portion of it.
Right on.
Just food for thought, man. I mean, I don't know if you can use Flash, but I've played with it.
Yeah, I'll have to check it out.
Yeah. Dude, we got a minute left in the show, man, and it's been an excellent show. I knew that you'd go the full 2 hours without so much as freaking losing a breath. I mean, if your phone hadn't dropped twice, this would have been a solid 2 hours of talking, mostly by Jason Sorrell.
Yeah, that's what Jamie was saying, that there was no way we were going to fall short on the 2 hours. So it's been kind of cool, man. It's been cool to answer some questions. Love talking about me, I guess.
Yeah, man. So I guess next week's schedule, sometime in the next day or so. We're out of here, man.
All right, man. Cool. Thanks a lot.
Later.
Later.